Our guest today is a poet for young people of any age. By that I mean to say is that Allen Ginsberg has seemed to young people to be their voice in many ways. And I dare say he is. And I think the reason that that has seemed so is that he has made a plea for poetry which has a direct contact with living instead of being in some way sifted through and residually presented through the academic censorship, shall we say, or standards. His standards are sound enough. He understands exactly what he's doing, although he says in his program that he doesn't. I don't believe him. But in any case, rather than take any more of his time, since we have such a short time, let me introduce to you Allen Ginsberg.
I better say in advance, obviously I can't represent or speak for anybody but myself. I'm getting old. First poem called Poem Rocket. Which has an epigraph from Gregory Corso, which is "Be a Star Screwer," written in Amsterdam at the time of the launching of the Sputnik. Moon no longer old, my eyes are new. Moon now attainable. No longer Romeo and Juliet, forgotten, sad face, impossible in drunken river, eye of loony Pierre. Moon new, moon possible, disk in heaven we get to, first in ageless constellations of names. As all is possible, so we'll reach another life. Moon Plotinus politicians, earth weeping and warring in eternity, though not one star disturbed by the screaming madmen from Hollywood, oil tycoons from Romania, controllers of petroleum making secret deals with flabby green Plutonians, slave camps on Saturn, Cuban revolutions on Mars. Old life and new side by side. Will Catholic Church find Christ on Jupiter? Will Muhammad also rave in eternity? Will Buddha be acceptable on the stolid planets? Or will we find Zoroastrian temples flowering on Neptune? What monstrous new ecclesiastical design on the entire universe unfolds in the dying Pope's brain? Enough of these earth-dwelling poetic excitements. The scientist alone is the true poet. He gives us the moon. He promises the stars. He'll make us a new universe if it comes to that. Einstein, I should have sent you my flaming manuscripts. Einstein, I should have pilgrimaged to your white hair. Fellow travelers, I write you a poem in Amsterdam, where Spinoza ground his magic lenses long ago. I write you a poem long ago. I finish standing at the high floor window over Montparnasse, looking at the universe. Already my feet are washed in death. Here I am, naked, without identity, with no more body than the fine black tracery of pen mark on soft paper, as star talks to star in the instant freedom of time. Now at last, I can speak to you, beloved brothers of an unknown moon, real yous, squatting in whatever form, amidst platonic vapors of eternity. I am another star. Will you eat my poems or read them? Or gaze with aluminum blind plates on sunless pages? Do you dream or translate and accept data with indifferent droopings of antennae? Do I make sense to your magical green receptor eye sockets? Do you have visions of God? Which way will the sunflower turn, surrounded by millions of suns? This is my rocket, my personal rocket. I send up my message beyond. Someone to hear me there. My immortality, without steel or cobalt, basalt or diamond, gold or mercurial fire, without passport, filing cabinets, bits of paper, warheads, without myself, finally, pure thought, message all and everywhere the same. I send up my rocket to land on whatever planet awaits it, planets full of fourth-dimensional poetry, where death shows movies, bones answer riddles, where plants speak courteously of abstract physics, and poetry itself is manufactured by the trees. The final planet, where the great brain of the universe sits waiting for a poem to land in his golden pocket, joining the other notes, mash notes, love sighs, complaints, shrieks of despair, and the million unutterable thoughts of frogs. I send you my rocket of amazing chemical, more than my hair, my sperm, or the cells of my body, a speeding thought that flies upward with my desire as instantaneous as light, as instantaneous as the universe and faster than light, and leave all other questions unfinished for the moment to turn back to sleep in my dark bed on Earth. Message from Paris. Since we had changed, rogered, spun, worked, wept, and pissed together, I wake up in the morning with a dream in my eyes, but you're gone in New York, remembering me. Good, I love you, and your brothers are crazy. I accept their drunk cases. It's too long that I've been alone. It's too long that I've sat up in bed without anyone to touch on the knee, man or woman. I don't care what anymore. I want love I was born for. I want you with me now. Ocean liners boiling over the Atlantic, delicate steelwork of unfinished skyscrapers, back end of the dirigible roaring over Lakehurst, six women dancing together on a red stage naked. The leaves are green on all the trees in Paris now. I'll be home in 6 months and look you in the eyes. A little poem about the steel industry called Squeal. He rises, he stretches, he liquefies, he is hammered again. He's divided in shares, he litters the floor of the bourse. He's cut by adamantine snips and sent by railway car, accumulated on the margin by bony Goldfinger, has various visions of being an automobile, consolidates the fortune of spectral lawyers, airs weep over him, he melts, he undergoes remarkable metamorphoses, peculiar hallucinations, he coughs up debentures. He's beaten by immense hammers in a vast loft. He pours in fire, he spurts upward in molten forges, he levels, he dreams, and he cools, and the present adjusted steel squints. A hunchback tuberculosis salesman drives him cackling to St. Louis in the rain. Hack, no will of his own. Squeak, next resale. Crank, St. Pedro. Tomorrow, St. Joe. Creep, will it never end? Ho, hocus. Crashes into a black locomotive. Never mind, the bastard. Stock market, stock averages decline slightly. Here's the mechanic. Blam, the junkyard. The smelter, later a merger. Pressure accumulates. He's had it. Wine, now he's an airplane. He wants to go home. Suddenly, he dives on the market like a bomb. Wrote this last night. That's the title. Listen to the tale of the sensitive car who was coughed up out of the earth in Pittsburgh. She screamed like a Swedish prime minister on her first flight down the red neon highway. She couldn't stand the sirens and blind lights of the mail cars, Fords, Oldsmobiles, Studebakers. Her assembly line foreman had prophesied wild wreck on Sunset Boulevard, headlights and eyeballs, broken fenders and bones. She rode all over Mexico, avoiding Los Angeles, praying to be an old junkie in a border town graveyard with rattly doors and yellow broken window panes, bent license plate, weak brakes and unsaleable motor, worn out by the slow buttocks of teenage nightmare, panting under the impoverished jism of the August moon, anything but that final joyride with a mad producer and his bombshell intellectual star on the last night up from Mexicali. The Lion for Real. Is it actually an adaptation of a form of a poem by Corbière called The Rhapsody of the Deaf Man. I came home and found a lion in my living room, rushed out on the fire escape screaming, "Lion! Lion!" Two stenographers pulled their brunette hair and banged the window shut. I hurried home to Patterson and stayed 2 days. Called up my old Reichian analyst who'd kicked me out of therapy for smoking African marijuana. "It's happened," I panted. "There's a lion in my room." I'm afraid any discussion would have no value. He hung up. My father and I shrank from each other, tearful and shaking. He tried to blame it on my mother's nervous breakdown. I tried to insist I actually never saw a lion. He didn't believe it. He went to his job in the zoo. Went to my old boyfriend. We got drunk with his girlfriend. I kissed him and announced that I had a lion with a mad gleam in my eye. We wound up fighting on the floor. I bit his eyebrow and he kicked me out. I ended masturbating in his Jeep, parked in the street, moaning, "Lion." Found Joey, my novelist friend, and roared at him, "Lion!" He looked at me blank and read me a snaky, mad poetry. I listened for lions. All I heard was elephants, tigers, hippogriffs, unicorns, ants, but figured he really understood me when we got high in Ignatz Wisdom's bathroom. But next day he sent me a leaf from his Smoky Mountain retreat. "I love you, little Bobo, with your delicate golden lions, but there being no self and no bars, therefore the zoo of your dear father hath no lion. You said your mother was mad. Don't expect me to produce the monster for your bridegroom." Confused, dazed, and exalted, bethought me of real lion starved in his stink in Harlem. Opened the door. The room was filled with the bomb blast of his anger. He roaring hungrily at the plaster walls, but nobody could hear him outside through the window. My eye caught the edge of the red neighbor apartment building standing in deafening stillness. We gazed at each other. His implacable yellow eye and the red halo of fur waxed roomy on my own, but he stopped roaring and bared a fang, greeting. I turned my back and cooked broccoli for supper on an iron gas stove, boiled water, and took a hot bath in the old tub under the sink board. He didn't eat me, though I regretted his starving in my presence. Next week he wasted away, sick rug full of bones, wheaten hair falling out, enraged and reddening eye as he lay aching, huge hairy head on his paws, by the wooden bookcase filled up with thin volumes of Plato and Buddha. Sat by his side every night, averting my eyes from his hungry, moth-eaten face. Stopped eating myself. He got weaker and roared at night while I had nightmares. Eyes hid in jungle leaves, eaten by a lion in bookstore on cosmic campus. A lion myself, starved by Professor Kandinsky. Run over by a lion in 42nd Street traffic. Dying in a lion's flophouse, toothless, asthmatic rig with a crank and a traveling geek circus, devouring hundreds of innocent bloody lambs in dairy marshes soggy with bleats. I woke up the mornings, the lion still added, dying on the floor. "Terrible presence," I cried, "eat me or die." It got up that afternoon, walked to the door with its paw on the wall to steady its trembling body, let out a soul-rending creak from the fiery roof of its mouth, thundering from my floor to heaven, heavier than a volcano at night in Mexico, pushed the door open and said in a gravelly voice, "Not this time, baby, but I will be back again." Lion that eats my mind now for a decade, knowing only your hunger, not the bliss of your satisfaction, O roar of the universe, how am I chosen? In this life, I have heard your promise. I am ready to die. I have served your starved and ancient presence, O Lord. I wait in my room at your mercy. To Aunt Rose. Aunt Rose, now, might I see you? With your thin face and buck-tooth smile and pain of rheumatism, and a long, black, heavy shoe for your bony left leg, limping down the long hall in Newark, on the running carpet past the grand black piano to the day room where the parties were, and I sang Spanish loyalist songs in a high, squeaky voice, hysterical, the comrades listening, while you limped around the room, collected the money. Aunt Honey, Uncle Sam, a stranger with a cloth arm in his pocket, and huge young bald head of Abraham Lincoln Brigade. Your long, sad face, your tears of sexual frustration, what smothered sobs and bony hips under the pillows of Osborne Terrace, the time I stood on the toilet seat naked and you powdered my thighs with calamine against the poison ivy, my tender and shamed first black curled hairs. What were you thinking in secret heart then, knowing me a man already, and I, an ignorant girl of family silence, on the thin pedestal of my legs in the bathroom, Museum of Newark, Aunt Rose, Hitler is dead, Hitler is in eternity, Hitler is with Tamburlaine and Emily Bronte. Though I see you walking still, a ghost on Osborne Terrace, down the long dark hall to the front door, limping a little, with a pinched smile in what must have been a silken flower dress, welcoming my father, the poet, on his visit to Newark, see you arriving in the living room, dancing on your crippled leg and clapping hands his book had been accepted by Liverite. Hitler is dead and Liverite's gone out of business. The Attic of the Past and Everlasting Minute are out of print. Uncle Harry sold his last silk stocking. Claire's left interpretive dancing school. Grandma remains a wrinkled monument in old ladies' home, blinking at new babies. Last time I saw you was the hospital. Pale skull protruding under ashen skin. Blue-veined, unconscious girl in an oxygen tent. The war in Spain had ended long ago, Aunt Rose. Ignu, which is an attempt at defining an American hero, the first line of which is, on top of that, if you know me, I pronounce you an Ignu. Ignu knows nothing of the world, a great ignoramus in factories, though he may own or inspire them or even be production manager. Ignu has knowledge of the angel. Indeed, Ignu is angel in comical form. W.C. Fields, a great Ignu. Whitman, an Ignu. Rambeau, a natural Ignu in his boy pants. The Ignu may be queer, though like not. Kind Ignu blows archangels for the strange thrill. A Gnostic, women love him. Christ overflowed with trembling semen for many a dead aunt. He's a great coxman. Most beautiful girls are worshipped by Ignu. Hollywood dolls or lone Marys of Idaho. Long-legged publicity women and secret housewives have known Ignu in another lifetime and remember their lover. Husbands also are secretly tender to Ignu, their buddy. Old-time friendship can do anything. Cuckold, bugger, drunk, trembling and happy. Ignu lives only once and eternally and knows it. He sleeps in everybody's bed. Everyone's lonesome for Ignu. Ignu knew solitude early. So Ignu's a primitive of cock and mind. Equally, the Ignu has written learned tomes, personal metaphysics, abstract images that scratch the moon, jokes of sages, lightning flash, flint spark. Dawn of intelligence turns the telephones into strange animals. He attacks the rose garden with his mystical shears, snip, snip, snip. Ignu has painted Park Avenue with his own long melancholy. And Ignu giggles in a hard chair over tea in Paris, bald in his decaying room, a black hotel. Ignu with his wild mop walks by Colosseum, weeping. He plucks a clover from Keats' grave and Shelley's a blade of grass. Ignu knew Coleridge. They had slow, hung-up talks at midnight over tables of mahogany in London, side street rooms in winter time, rain outside, fog, the cabman blows his hand, Charles Dickens is born, Ignu hears the wail of the babe. Ignu goofs under bridges and laughs at battleships. Ignu is a battleship without guns in the North Sea, lost. He knows geography, he was there already. He'll get out and die as before, reborn with a star on his forehead, a halo over his cranium, a bearded humming Jew of Arabian mournful jokes, listening to music, musing, happy at the fall of a leaf, the moonlight of immortality in his hair, table hopping, most elegant comrade of all, most delicate mannered in the Sufi court, he wasn't even there at all, wearing zodiacal blue sleeves and the long peaked cone hat of a magician, listening to the silence of a well at midnight under a red star, in the lobby of Rockefeller Center, attentive, courteous, bare-eyed, enthusiastic, with or without pants. Ignu's a natural. You can see it when he pays the cab fare, abstracted, pulling off the money out of a great saintly roll, or counting his disappearing pennies to give to the bus driver whom he admires. Ignu listens to jazz as if he were a Negro afflicted with Jewish melancholy and white divinity. Ignu has sought you out. He's the seeker of God, and God breaks down the world for him every 10 years. He sees flashes of lightning in broad daylight when the sky is blue. He hears Blake's disembodied voice recite the sunflower in a room in Harlem. No woe on him, surrounded by 700,000 mad scholars. Moths fly out of his sleeve. He wants to die, give up, go mad, break through into eternity, live on and teach an aged saint, or break down to an eyebrow clown. All Ignus know each other in a moment's talk and measure each other up at once as lifetime friends. Romantic winks and giggles across continents. Mocking hipsters' laughter blends in the flowers. One or two grim Ignus in the pack. One laughing monk in dungarees. One delighted by cracking his eggs in an egg cup. One listens to music all night long, rock and roll. One sits in jail all night and bets Karmaic racetrack. One anthropologist cuckoo in the Peten rainforest. One takes junk, goofball artist, lawyer of the abstract. One chases girls down East Broadway into the Coliseum. One pulls out withered grapes and rotten onions from his pants. One has a nanny goat under his bed to amuse visitors and plasters the wall with crap. One collects scorpions, whiskies, skies, etc. Would steal the moon if he could find it. That would set fire to America. None of these make them an Ignu. It's the soul that makes the style, the tender firecracker of their thought, the amity of letters from strange cities to old friends, and the new radiance of morning on a foreign bed, a comedy of personal being, his grubby divinity. Eliot, probably an Ignu, one of the few, who's funny when he eats. Williams of Patterson, a dying American Ignu. Bill Burroughs, the purest Ignu. His haircut is a cream. His left finger, pinky, chopped off for early Ignu reasons. Metaphysical spells, love spells with psychoanalysts. His very junkhood an accomplishment beyond $1 million. That's an Ignu for you. Céline is an Ignu, old Ignu over prose. I saw him in Paris, dirty old gentleman of ratty talk, brown mold under historic fingernails. Pure genius, his giving morphine all night to 1,400 passengers on a sinking ship because they were all getting emotional. Who's amazing you is Ignu. Communicate with me by mail, post, telephone, street accusation, or scratching at my window and send me a true sign. I'll reply, special delivery. Death is a letter that was never sent. Special revelation to the Ignu. Knowledge born of sweet ambition, acquaintance with stamps, words, laughing gas, history with a blue halo, poetry a celestial din in a bright window, photographs of the sea, one eye in the clouds, and the lone vulture on a sand plain seen from the window of a Turkish bus. It must be a trick. Two diamonds in the hand, one poetry, one charity, proves we have dreamed. And the long sword of intelligence over which I constantly stumble, like my pants at the age 6, embarrassed. Short poem to Vachel Lindsay, who committed suicide, 1931. An imagination of him from Paris to Lindsay. Vachel, the stars are out. Dusk has fallen on the Colorado road. A car crawls slowly across the plain. In the dim light, the radio blares its jazz. The heartbroken salesman lights another cigarette. In another city, 27 years ago, I see your shadow on the wall. You're sitting in your suspenders on the bed. The shadow hand lifts up a pistol to your head. Your shade falls over on the floor. I'd like to read the beginning of a long poem called Kaddish, which is a Hebrew morning service written for my mother, using some of the rhythms of the Hebrew service. The sound of it in the original is Vis Borach, Vis Debach, Vis Boar, Vis Romam, Vis Nase, Vis Hador, Vis Hale, Vis Halo, Shmad Brichu, Shmad Kisho Brichu. Strange now to think of you, gone without corsets and eyes, while I walk on the sunny pavement of Greenwich Village, downtown Manhattan, clear winter noon, and I've been up all night, talking, reading the Kaddish aloud, listening to Ray Charles' blue shout blind on the phonograph, the rhythm, and your memory in my head 3 years after, and read Adonais' last triumphant stanzas aloud, wept, realizing how we suffer, and how death is that remedy all singers sing of, dream, remember, prophesy as in the Hebrew anthem, or the Buddhist book of answers, or my own imagination of a withered leaf at dawn. Dreaming back through life, your time, and mine accelerating toward apocalypse, the final moment, the burning flower in the day, and what comes after? Looking back on the mind itself that saw an American city, a flash away, and the great dream of me or China, or you and a phantom Russia, or a crumpled bed that never existed, like a poem in the dark, escape back to oblivion. No more to say, and nothing to weep for but the beings in the dream, trapped in its disappearance, sighing, screaming with it, buying and selling pieces of phantom, worshiping each other, worshiping the God included in it all, longing or inevitability, while it lasts, a vision, anything more? It leaps about me as I go out and walk the street, look back over my shoulder, 7th Avenue, the battlements of window office buildings shouldering each other high under a cloud tall as the sky an instant and the sky above an old blue place. Or down the avenue to the south, too, as I walked toward the Lower East Side, where you walked 50 years ago, little girl, from Russia, eating the first poisonous tomatoes of America, frightened on the dock, then struggling in the crowds of Orchard Street toward what? Toward Newark, toward Candy Store, first homemade sodas of the century, hand-churned ice cream in back room on musty brown floorboards, toward education, marriage, nervous breakdown, operation, teaching school, and learning to be mad in a dream. What is this life? Toward the key in the window, and the great key lays its head of light on top of Manhattan and over the floor and lays down on the sidewalk in a single vast beam moving as I walk down first toward the Yiddish theater and the place of poverty you knew and I know, but without caring now. Strange to have moved through Patterson and the West and Europe and here again. With the cries of Spaniards now in the door stoops doors and dark boys on the street and fire escapes old as you, though you're not old now, that's left here with me. Myself, anyhow, maybe as old as the universe, and I guess that dies with us, enough to cancel all that comes. What came is gone forever every time. That's good. That leaves it open for no regret, no fear radiators, lack love, torture, even toothache in the end. Though while it comes, it is a lion that eats the soul, and the lamb, the soul in us, alas, offering itself in sacrifice to change's fierce hunger, hair and teeth, and the roar of bone pain, skull bare, break rib, rot skin, brain tricked, implacability. Aye, we do worse. We are in a fix, and you're out. Death laid you out. Death had the mercy. You're done with your century, done with God, done with the path through it, done with yourself at last, pure, back to the babe dark before your father, before us all, before the world. There, rest, no more suffering for you. I know where you've gone. It's good. No more flowers in the summer fields of New York. No joy now. No more fear of Louis. No more of his sweetness and glasses, his high school decades, debts, loves, frightened telephone calls, conception beds, relatives, hands. No more of Sister Eleanor. She gone before you. We kept it secret. You killed her, or she killed herself to bear with you, an arthritic heart, but death's killed you both, no matter. Nor your memory of your mother, 1915 tears in silent movies, weeks and weeks, forgetting, aggrieve, watching Marie Dressler address humanity, Chaplin dance in youth, or Boris Godunov, Shalyapin's at the Met, holding his voice of a weeping czar, by standing room with Eleanor and Max, watching also the capitalists take seats in orchestra, white furs, diamonds, with the Young People's Socialist League hitchhiking through Pennsylvania, in black baggy gym skirt pants, photograph of four girls holding each other around the waist, and laughing eye, too coy, virginal solitude of 1920, all girls grown old or dead now, and that long hair in the grave, lucky to have had husbands later. You made it. I came too. Eugene, my brother before, still grieving now, and will grieve on to his last stiff hand as he goes through his cancer or kill. Soon he will think, later perhaps. And it's the last moment I remember when I see them all through myself now, though not you. I didn't foresee what you felt, what more hideous gape of bad mouth came first to you. And were you prepared to go where? In that dark, that in that God, a radiance, a lord in the void, like the eye in the black cloud of a dream. Adonai at last with you, beyond my remembrance, incapable to guess, not merely the yellow skull in the grave, or a box of worm dust and a stained ribbon, death's head with halo, can you believe it? Is it only the sun that shines once for the mind, only the flash of existence, then none ever was, nothing beyond what we have, what you had, that so pitiful, yet triumph to have been here and changed like a tree broken or flower fed to the ground, but mad with its petals, colored, thinking great universe, shaken, cut in the head, leaf stripped, hid in an egg crate hospital, cloth wrapped, sore, freaked in the moon brain, nautilus, no flower like that flower which knew itself in the garden and fought the knife, lost, cut down by an idiot snowman's icy, even in the spring, strange ghost thought, some death, sharp icicle in his hand, crowned with old roses, a dog for his eyes, cock of a sweatshop, heart of electric irons, all the accumulations of life that wear us out, clocks, bodies, consciousness, shoes, breasts, begotten sons, your communism, paranoia into hospitals. You once kicked Eleanor in the leg. She died of heart failure later, you of stroke. Asleep, within a year, the two of you, sisters in death. Is Eleanor happy? Max grieves alive in an office on Lower Broadway, lone large mustache over midnight accountings, not sure. His life passes, as he sees, and what does he doubt now? Still dream of making money, or that might have made money, hired nurse, had children, found even your immortality, Naomi? I'll see him soon. Now I've got to cut through, to talk to you, as I didn't when you had a mouth, forever, and we're bound for that, forever, like Emily Dickinson's horses, headed to the end. They know the way, these steeds, run faster than we think. It's our own life they cross and take with them. Magnificent, mourn no more, marred of heart, mind behind, married dreamed, mortal changed, ass and face done with the murder. In the world given, flower maddened, made no utopia, shut under pine, almed in earth, balmed in lone, Jehovah, accept, nameless, one-faced, forever beyond me, beginningless, endless, father in death, though I am not here for this prophecy, I am unmarried, I'm hymnless, I'm heavenless, headless in blisshood, I would still adore thee, heaven after death, only one blessed in nothingness, not light or darkness, dayless eternity. Take this, this psalm from me, burst from my hand in a day, some of my time, now given to nothing, to praise thee, but death, this is the end, the redemption from wilderness, way for the wanderer, house sought for all, black handkerchief washed clean by weeping, page beyond psalm, last change of mine and Naomi to God's perfect darkness. Death, stay thy phantoms. only to have not forgotten the beginning in which she drank cheap sodas in the morgues of Newark, only to have seen her weep over tables in the wards of her gray universe, only to have seen the weird ideas of Hitler at the door, the wires in her head, the three big sticks rammed down her back, the voices in the ceiling shrieking out her ugly early lays for 50 years. Only to have seen the time jumps, memory lapse, the crash of wars, the roar and silence of a vast electric shock. Only to have seen her painting crude pictures of elevateds running over the rooftops of the Bronx, her brothers dead in Riverside or Russia, her alone, Long Island, writing a last letter, her image in the sunlight at the window. The key is in the window, in the sunlight, at the bars, the key is in the sunlight. Only to have come to death that night on iron bed by stroke when sun gone down on Long Island and the vast Atlantic roars outside the great call of being to its own to come back out of the nightmare, divided creation, with her head laying on a pillow of the hospital, laying her head down to die, one last glimpse, all earth, one everlasting flight in the devouring blackout. No tears for this vision, but that the key should be left behind at the window, the key in the sunlight to the living that can take that slice of light in hand and turn the door, only to look back to see creation glistening backwards to the same grave, size of universe, size of the tick of the hospital's clock on the archway over the white wall. Oh, mother, what have I left out? Oh, mother, what have I forgotten? Farewell with a long black shoe. Farewell with an old dress and broken stocking. Farewell with six dark hairs on the wen of your breast. Farewell with your lost teeth and a long black beard around the vagina. Farewell with your sagging belly, with your eyes of excuses, with your fear of Hitler, with your fingers of rotten mandolins, with your thighs of ineluctable politics, with your arms of fat Patterson porches, with your belly of strikes and smokestacks, with your chin of Trotsky and the Spanish Civil War, with your voice singing for the decaying, overbroken workers, with your nose of bad lay, with your nose of the smell of the pickles of Newark, with your eyes of Russia, with your eyes of no money, with your eyes of Uncle Max, with your eyes of false China, with your eyes of Aunt Eleanor, with your eyes of starving India, with your eyes pissing in the park, with your eyes weeping in the bathroom, with your eyes of your failure at the piano, with your eyes of your relatives in California, with your eyes of your mother in the movies, with your eyes of Finland fighting Soviet Union, with your eyes of Ma Rainey dying in an ambulance, with your eyes of your bad short stories for children, with your eyes of Czechoslovakia attacked by robots, with your eyes going to painting classes at night in the Bronx, with your eyes of the killer grandma you see at night in the distance, with your eyes running naked out of the apartment screaming into the hall, with your eyes led away by policemen to an ambulance, with your eyes strapped down on the operating table, with your eyes with the pancreas removed, with your eyes of appendix operation, with your eyes of abortion, with your eyes of ovaries removed, with your eyes of shock, with your eyes of lobotomy, with your eyes of divorce, with your eyes of stroke, with your eyes alone, with your eyes, with your eyes, with your death full of flowers. Caw, 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 crows shriek in the white sun over gravestones in Long Island. Lord, 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 my mother come to this, grasp my half-life and my own as hers. Caw, 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 my eyes be blinkless and unangeled in the same dank grave box lost. Lord, Lord, bright eye that moves in a black cloud and stares on all indifferent and familiar. Caw, caw, bleak cry of beings flung up in foreign sky over the waving trees. Lord, Lord, O grinder of giant beyonds, my own voice lost in blackness beyond imaginings. Caw, caw, the shriek of time rent out of foot and wing an instant in the universe. Lord, Lord, an echo in the sky, the wind in ragged leaves, the roar of memory. Caw, caw, all years, my birth, a dream. Caw, caw, New York, the bus, the broken shoe, the vast high school. Caw, caw, all visions of the Lord, Lord, Lord. Caw, 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 Lord, Lord, Lord. Caw, 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 Lord.